You're listening to the Electric Sheep Magazine podcast. I'm Alex Fitch, and in this episode, I'm talking to Hollywood producer Brian Usner, a filmmaker best known for his work in horror movies over the last 30 years, and as a producer has garnered a cult following for his work on H.P. Lovecraft adaptations such as Reanimator, From Beyond, and Necronomicon. As a director, he made the two sequels to Reanimator, as well as such other cult fare as Return of the Living Dead 3, The Dentist, and Progeny. I interviewed Brian on a rare visit to the UK when he was lecturing students at the University of Brighton earlier this year, as part of the ongoing Cine Access Festival. Brian was also in the city to introduce a screening of Society at the Duke Cinema, and so I took the opportunity to talk to him about this movie as well as his various other projects. The interview was recorded in the busy cafe of the Grand Parade campus of Brighton University, so you'll have to forgive the background noise. Is Society a film of yours that you have particular love of as time has gone on? It certainly seems like a film that wasn't appreciated enough when it originally came out, and now actually is very much a valuable document of the 1980s on film.
Well, you're right about that. I don't know about being a valuable document, but there's been a renewed interest in it, or maybe there has been grown an interest in it. I know in the United States it was never really given much attention. The reviews were a bit, I think a lot of people were a bit offended by it. In other areas it did quite well, but now, in the last year or two, there's been many requests to screen it. And right, this screening tonight is actually a remaster that is being done in German. It's kind of, they rushed it over here, but it's the a new transfer.
Okay.
And it will be, it's the master for a... for the Blu-ray DVDs, which will be coming out both here in the UK as well as the United States and other parts of the world. It is a very special movie to me because it's the first one I directed.
Yeah.
And it definitely represents a lot of the things I love in movies. So for me, it is. I'm very gratified to see a renewed interest in it because I've made a lot of movies. Some of them kind of fade by the wayside. Some never quite, do very well. Others seem like they're great when they come out, and then they don't seem so interesting later. So it's neat to have one that. Is starting to get, in a way, more interest than it ever had.
Yeah.
And that's kind of fun.
Well, I wonder if the kind of negative feedback it got when it was originally released was because the film isn't easily identifiable as one genre or another. It's certainly kind of, undermining or satirizing the prevalent theme of how great kind of yuppie culture was at the time and the kind of like glorification of wealth in the 80s. And at the same time, while body horror films were starting to emerge, certainly via the likes of David Cronenberg, I guess because your film mashes up more than one genre, it was very hard to kind of pin it down at the time.
Yeah, I used to call it psycho fiction.
I like that.
I'm a huge horror fan, and I knew going in that it wasn't strictly a horror movie. It doesn't really satisfy the horror criteria, at least the style of a horror movie. Although it does qualify in a lot of ways. It is a mashup in a way, but I don't know if it's a mashup. I mean, I guess you could say it's sort of a high school movie in a kind of very cartoony style. It's got a very bright cartoony style. It's comedy. It's kind of satire, maybe clumsy comedy. But for me, it was trying to find a way to... it's for me, it's a little bit of a surrealist experiment as well. and finding a narrative that works for these kind of things I wanted to do.
Yeah. You'd already been working as a producer on other people's films at this point. Did you find the move to becoming a director difficult, or was it always something that you'd been doing kind of subconsciously anyway in your producer's role?
I hadn't been doing it subconsciously. I did, you know, the movies I made, the three movies that I made before that were... that I produced, well, the first one, Reanimator, I mean, I paid for it. I feel very, very, very close to that movie. And certainly From Beyond is, I'm quite close to. You know, when I began making movies, I kind of learned by being a producer. And I think almost anybody who's involved in a movie in more or less a creative way, at one point you kind of go, gee, I'd like to direct. And, you know, I always say that there's only one person on the movie set that doesn't have to know what he's doing. That's the director. If everybody else does, he'll be okay. You know, I'm kind of that...
Help him realize the vision.
I'm a little bit My Fair Lady about it. I am the bet that I can take anybody you point to out off the street and I could produce a movie with them, direct it.
I'd be happy to take that bet, Brian.
But of course, talent, skill, training, all those things are very important. But I felt very close to the movies I produced, very, very involved. And at one point, for various reasons, I realized I wanted to, you know, try directing. And I also knew that if I did, I might be one of the 99.9% of directors who get one chance. So I had the right to do the Reanimator sequel. So I made a deal to do that with another movie first. So I figured, well, if the first one stinks, I still get another chance.
A great number of your producing and directing credits have been in either adaptations of H.P. Lovecraft stories or films that have taken elements of his mythology and taken them in new directions, whether it's the Reanimator series, From Beyond, Necronomicon, Dagon. What is it about his oeuvre that inspires you?
I think the simple answer to that is that Lovecraft created a kind of a world, a universe, within which you can write a story, you can make a movie, you can. There's so much room for original stories, and I think that it's a classical horror, but it's very modern. He wrote in the teens and 20s into the 30s of the 20th century. And he was very modern. It was a horror without the Gothic romance. I think he's maybe closer to H.G. Wells than Edgar Allan Poe in some ways. It's a horror that just doesn't have religion. Most horror is rooted in religious mythology. So he had a very science fiction basis to his cosmic horror, which is what he called his work. I always think of him as a writer of the weird, but I think it's, you know, cosmic horror is what he did. I think From Beyond is very cosmic horror. I wouldn't say Reanimator is. Dagon, you know, not really. But this is the world of Lovecraft, and many people have written stories within his universe, and you can make movies with it. And we have to have something to go back to. So you either go to Poe, or you go to Bram Stoker, or you go to H.G. Wells, or Jules Verne. Of course, we're into a little bit of more sci-fi in these areas. Or you go back to the Universal horror movies, or Valhalla, or Hammer. You go somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, and every now and again there's a writer makes a change, becomes a new, there's a new step. So in the way that I would say in the vampire story, you know, in how we tell vampire stories, the vampire mythology as a popular entertainment, you know, we start pretty much with Bram Stoker, and then we leap all the way up to Interview with the Vampire. Between the two, there's not much, there's no sea change.
No, indeed.
And I think with, you know, with the zombie movie, you go up, you know, it's Night of the Living Dead based on I Am Legend. The entire zombie, every zombie story is in, we can find in the novella I Am Legend. I think that these, you know, this, Lovecraft is that kind of writer. You know, he is the, for me, is the modern horror writer. And of course you can say, well, Stephen King is absolutely, you know, he's so prolific and he's very, very important. In many ways, and maybe he's on that level, but the other thing about Stephen King is he basically reinterpreted every kind of horror trope we have. So, yeah, some of it's super original, but I'm not sure that he will be the kind of influence historically that Lovecraft is becoming now.
Well, and also, I mean, thinking of connections with your other work that isn't Lovecraft-based, you know, even Society compared to some of the Lovecraft adaptations, they share a similar theme of the presence of the uncanny in a very suburban environment, in the city, in the college, places where you don't expect this kind of like festering evil or malevolent presence.
Yeah, well, I think you're right in the sense that was Lovecraft's theme. It was that disquieting sense that beneath the surface of our reality, there's an unspeakable horror, and we only maintain our sanity by not knowing about it. Our ignorance is the only thing that protects us. So I think, yes, that's Society. And I'm very interested in, I've always been quite interested in the idea that reality, objective reality, is really made up of where the overlapping subjective realities kind of merge, and that there are, you know, that depending on what point of view you take, reality is something quite different. And so in Society, of course, it's a privileged teenager who realizes that the world isn't what he thinks it is.
You've also come on board a couple of franchises that you didn't originate, the Return of the Living Dead franchise, the Silent Night, Deadly Night franchise. When you're taking on ideas that other people have started and then you have the opportunity to add your own to the mix, is that a challenge that you find quite interesting? Because, you know, you're sort of adding your own personality to an ongoing narrative that maybe someone else will continue after you.
Yes, it's different from, it's definitely different from doing an original story. It's not so different from doing an adaptation of previous material, which you can do successfully or unsuccessfully. The one that I particularly like is The Return of the Living Dead 3, because I liked Return of the Living Dead so much. So for me, if I look at the 80s, the early 80s, there would be a trilogy of films that I think really are essential to understanding horror. And that would be, that happened at that time and were really influential. And that would be Reanimator, Return of the Living Dead, and Evil Dead. And I think those three share something. It would be a good triple feature, because I think you would see, even though they're quite different one from the other, they kind of share a sensibility. Just like if I was going to do a triple feature with society, I would put society, parents, and Heathers. And I
yeah.
think that even though you would say, well, just a minute, Heathers isn't a horror movie, how do you...
No, I completely agree with you.
But I think I think one of the problems that society had coming out was that it didn't fit.
Mm.
But if you look back at it, if you put it in that context, I think an audience today would start to get would start to have a context for it. With Return of the Living Dead, the original, I think that is the movie that finally cracked the problem of how to do EC horror comics as a filmed entertainment. Before that, we did have Creepshow and many, many attempts to make cartoons, especially horror cartoons, into movies. Mm. And normally it always had that ironic twist.
Mm.
You know, there's this sense of humor and horror to it. Very fun, pulpy horror. But it never really kind of took off until Dan O'Bannon was able to show how it could be done.
Mm.
Without Return of the Living Dead, there would never have been a Tales from the Crypt.
Mm.
They took his method. So for me, I think that movie is really great. To get the opportunity to make one of them, I was very happy. But I also knew that it was difficult to it's a tough act to follow. Although the second movie had already not lived up to the possibilities, and so that gave me a chance.
Well, it's like you're rehabilitating the franchise.
Yeah, and of course, I saw it as a way to make a movie.
Mm.
I felt like I had an obligation to it, but I said, hey, I get to make a zombie movie.
Mm.
And in fact, it wasn't careful. I mean, it didn't follow the tone of the original. Because it wasn't funny. The original is meant to be funny.
Mm.
It has comedic intent, I think, ironic intent. And I, for some reason, because I normally put humor in my movies, for some reason in this one, I wasn't interested. And I even asked I asked the studio when they proposed it. I said, well, does it have to be funny? And they said, nope, we don't care. And I said, well, do I have to carry on the other characters? Because the second one, they had to bring back characters that already left the possibilities of being reanimated. And they said, nope, we don't care. Actors, it would be good to put some in, but don't worry about it. I said, well, what do I have to have? And they said, brainy. So I wanted to make kind of a straight movie, and I had a hard time figuring out what the logic of brain eating is in a zombie movie. And then I also was keenly aware that Return of the Living Dead was kind of an unofficial sequel
to
Night of the Living Dead, to Romero's stuff. And the mythology was different. So then I thought, well, let's see, I'm making the second sequel to an alternate sequel to a horror classic. Is that it? And what I tried to do was deal with the mythologies of both. And I tried to incorporate be true to both the Romero and the Dan O'Bannon versions of zombie in all packaged up into a love story. After having done Bride of Reanimator, I realized that the character I liked the most in the movie was the bride, and she only showed up at the end. She was a collection of body parts. And then I thought, God, I wish I'd seen more of her. How come I waited so long in the movie to bring her up, only to put her down again? And so with Return of the Living Dead 3, I said, I want the zombie to be the main character. And I thought, now I can do the bride, but she'll be the movie. And so that was my way of just doing what I wanted to do. The sequel was, doing the part of the franchise was just an opportunity to make a movie. Now, other than with with the Silent Night, Deadly Night, because I wasn't a huge fan of the series, for me it was just an opportunity. And in fact, and I regret this now, in fact, I didn't pay any attention to it. I just had it take place. I even subverted it by making the girl Jewish. I completely went against it. And it, I think in it, that movie, I think, was a... I actually... that was a very, in a way, a very experimental movie that I tried to do things. I tried to do more ideas in that than any other movie I've done, and it didn't turn out very well. But what we were trying to do was quite interesting. At that time, I just saw movies as a way to just try to do all these visual things that I was interested in. And of course, later I did a sequel to The Dentist, which I had already done, and that was really a straight sequel. There wasn't any; it wasn't just an excuse to make a movie.
Well, I think if there is any kind of continuing trope throughout your work, it is actually being subversive. It's taking elements of society or culture and then kind of like twisting them slightly, which is a common trait to both horror and comedy, which is, I suppose, reasons why those two genres are often co-present in your work.
You could be right, because I, when I went out to Hollywood and was going to throw all my chips on a movie, I was developing a comedy as while I was developing Reanimator. And I just finally, when it came down to it, I just thought, you know, I think horror is more me, but I do love comedy. So you're right about that.
You've produced a number of films directed by Stuart Gordon. What do you think forms a good producer-director relationship that makes you want to go back and work together again?
It's hard to say. I think with Stuart, the thing is that we somehow, well, Stuart always says we bring out the worst in each other. So there's some kind of compliment. It really has to do with, he's just someone that I find very fruitful to work with. I don't ever feel like I'm a lot of times in developing movies, making movies, I feel like I'm really fighting to get something, to reach something, to find something. And with when I work with Stuart, I feel we never have that part of it. It seems like we just take off. The ideas come fast and furious. It's like a conversation. It just goes. And so there's something very complimentary, and I guess it must just have to do with our personalities, because we are very different types of people, and we have, I think, very different skills and talents.
I interviewed Stuart a few years ago when Edmund came out, and he said that the next project he was hoping to work on was House of Reanimator. That was 4 years ago. Is there any chance that project may reach fruition?
There is a chance. We've just started talking about it again. The problem today, I think that the video revolution kind of got stomped. You know, you remember that movie Godzilla Meets Bambi?
Yeah.
Well, I think the business of independent horror films is Bambi, and the new digital economy is Godzilla. And I think that what I started in the 80s, and we rode the video revolution as it crested and as it started winding down, and the digital was a big, big part of killing the financial model. And it's pretty much, it's really on life support now. And what's, there's a new, something new is happening, and it has to do with digital platforms and, you know, crowdfunding and DOD, and there's lots of different ways it goes. It's still, it's just starting, but I think it's going to, it's a whole new model that's evolving. And of course we got hit by the capital markets collapse in 2008. And so at that point, 2008-2009, what was already a business that was kind of getting tougher, is all of a sudden financing just really dried up.
Yeah.
And I think that for people like me and Stuart, people of our age, it's hard to adapt.
Yeah.
Because we have not grown up with it. We have certain preconceived notions. We have a certain approach to not just making the movies, but I'm talking about the financing approach to it. So I think that's one reason why it's been so difficult. But then movies have always been difficult to make. It took me, I had the script for Dagon written in 1986.
Wow.
And we made it in 2002, I think. That's how long it took. And we worked a few times, we thought we'd get it done. You know, until finally the situation was available to me to make it.
Yeah.
So I think with the House of Reanimator, where we thought we had it financed, it fell apart.
You could try and crowdfunding it.
Well, that's another way to go. And that's, so now we're going to give it another shot.
And it's funny, you said that you kind of have to respond to all the new challenges that you face as a filmmaker, whether it's the advent of video or new technologies. I mean, one of the, I guess, omnipresent aspects of the new technologies that a lot of people are consuming moving images on at the moment, whether it's tablets or mobile phones, are very short films. So we've started getting horror anthologies like VHS and the ABCs of Death, where each segment is getting shorter and shorter. And you've already had to respond to that by making a 60-second movie a couple of years ago. Oh. So it feels like you're actually at the forefront of meeting these challenges.
Well, I'm trying to stay in the game. And whatever that takes, I don't pretend to be on the cutting edge. Of course I'm not. But I'm trying. I mean, you know, you hate to quit working, quit doing stuff you like to do. But I think there may be, we may need to come up with new narrative structures. We certainly need to come up with new ways of financing. And movies have always been inseparable from the financing. And so it's always been a story of financing and exploitation. The movie itself, unless you're, even Stan Brakhage probably had to finance his experiment. So how do you do that, you know? And if you want to make something that has an audience, and I think we're a little, you know, we're not thinking, you know, people like me and Stuart, we're not really interested in doing it as a hobby. We want an audience. We want to be a part of the industry of the medium. And so it's not like we want to take our iPhones and shoot stuff in our kitchen. We want to have actors and sets, stories and music, and the stuff we liked when we were younger, and still do.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
CineXcess, the international conference and festival on global cult film traditions, which is run by Xavier Mendick, a lecturer in film at the University of Brighton, is taking place on the weekend of the 15th to the 17th of November at MAC Birmingham, where guests include French filmmaker Catherine Brulat, director of Romance and Anatomy of Hell, and Italian auteur Francesco Barilli, director of The Perfume of the Lady in Black. There are a variety of cult film screenings taking place over the weekend, as well as academic presentations of new work around the subject of cult cinema. For more information about this festival, please go to cine-xs.co.uk. That's cine-exess.co.uk. And for more information about Mac Birmingham, please go to macarts.co.uk. Another cinema-related event taking place at the University of Brighton is the current exhibition of the art of Jan Szwankmajer, cult Polish animator whose films include Alice and Little Otik. The exhibition, Jan Szwankmajer, The Inner Life of Objects, is taking place at the University of Brighton Faculty of Arts on Grand Parade in Brighton until the 2nd of December, and you can find more information about the exhibition at arts.brighton.ac.uk. This podcast is part of a 3-month look at Gothic cinema on the Electric Sheep magazine website, and you can find a transcript of the first part of my interview with cult director Roger Corman about his 60-year tenure in the industry on electricsheepmagazine.co.uk now, with the second part of my interview coming up shortly, followed by an interview with George A. Romero, director of Night of the Living Dead, in December. The Electric Sheep podcast was recorded, edited, and introduced by Alex Fitch, is a Panel Borders production, and there'll be a new episode online soon. Thanks for listening.